This episode of Super Pulp Science is brought to you by the things we make. If you want to support Gregory Kamichuk, you can go to gmbkamichuk.ca. And if you think Justin Curry is just all right, you can go to chasingartwork.com.
Attention, citizens. It's time for Super Pulp Science.
This is Super Pulp Science. No, I can't do it.
This is Super Pulp Science, where we talk about how genre gets made. I am Gregory Kamichuk, a working writer and illustrator. I have a working writer and comics letterist, Lyndon Rodchenko, on the podcast with me, and long-suffering. Why do you make that face?
Why do you call me long-suffering?
Well, I know. Well, someone has to suffer in Justin's absence.
Okay, he can still suffer when he's not here.
No, Justin is not here, so.
He's at the airport today. I guarantee he's
long-suffering. Long-suffering producer extraordinaire, Dan Vettermunker, is also here. And this is our post-Icon wrap-up. Now, when I originally envisioned the discussion that would happen around this episode, it was based on a fallacy. So let's open with that. I believed, because of a series of events that happened at the show, that Dan, you in fact were present at Icon. That is in fact false.
No.
But we will get to it. Yes. See, you're surprised too. Because
you think I'd be there and not stop by and say hi?
I thought perhaps in your official capacity as a reporter.
Oh, no. We didn't even cover Icon.
And I also thought because you sometimes text me quite sassily about how much I appear in local Winnipeg coverage, news B-roll, that maybe you were just trying to expunge that whole experience from you so you didn't come see me at Icon.
No.
Dear listener, this is what happened. Icon is one of our favorite shows of the year. It's a local anime show focusing on manga, anime, and programming that goes round the clock. And you may ask yourself, why, Gregory, you don't do manga or anime? No, I don't. But that's how inclusive this show is. And because I have enough giant robots and magical girls on my table, sort of thematically it matches. And it's a great time is had by all. Over the loudspeaker, we heard through the booming voice of the convention that Dan Vettermunker. Daniel Vettermunker should come immediately to Lost and Found. And so the voice of the convention gods themselves told us that you were present.
Wow, that's hilarious. No, that was because. That's funny. Okay. That's because my oldest was there on day two and lost my bank card.
Now
so I think they're all calling me there when I wasn't there.
Now I approached the booth and I said, hey guys, just so you know, if Dan doesn't appear, you can take whatever it is that he's lost to GMB Kamichuk's booth.
That's right. They
said, well, no, because we require identification to return this missing item. But they wouldn't tell me what it was.
Yeah, they wouldn't tell us. And so to their credit, because it was a bank card or a credit card or whatever, they didn't tell me what they had. And they said, if you can describe what it is that you're picking up and you can give us some very specific information about it, maybe we will entrust it to you. But this doesn't seem like the kind of thing we should just hand over to somebody. And I thought that for a lost and found at a very busy convention, this was A plus marks.
Yeah, and even actually, I'll tell you, just finish the story. My son actually went there and said, it's mine. I lost it. It's my dad's card. He gave it to me so I could spend money here. And they said, I'm sorry, we can't do it without photo ID. And he's like, could you come down here? I'm like, I'm not coming down here. Are you done shopping? He's like, yeah. I'm like, okay, good. Don't worry about it. I'll order a new card. And that's it. It's probably still sitting there. I don't care. But that's hilarious. I didn't know they announced my name and stuff like that. So now I have an alibi. If I got away with anything bad that afternoon, which I don't think I did, I could have an alibi.
As far as people know, you are at Icon all day.
There was an announcement for me. I must be there.
And there's actually spending history for you there,
too. Yes, actually, because my bank card was there. But what happened was...
So time travel... Okay, Dan Vettermunker of the future, who's discovered time travel. This is the episode you're listening to where you realize that's the day you can travel back in time and commit that crime.
Oh, okay. Good to know. Mental note. Okay, so, but what funny is my experience, and I was working at CTV, we did not cover Icon at all. I pitched it several times. It did not get other more important things happening this weekend. So we did not cover Icon, so you did not come across my B-roll. But I was, you know, working, I was working at CTV and I thought, well, my kids are with me, but they want to go to the convention. So they would go. Two of my, two younger children, went on the Saturday and they went and they took my bank card and they went and had fun and they did not lose it. But one of them did send me back a selfie with Justin, which I thought was quite funny.
With famous Justin Curry.
So she's like my daughter's just like I said, okay, go in there. I didn't even say anything about say hi to these guys for me. Like they know that I'm friends with you guys. They see I have your artwork up at home, that kind of stuff. And so, but she actually sent me, I think Justin recognized her. I think said, hey, do you know Dan Vademonker? And she's like, yeah, that's my dad. So I think that's what happened there. But I got a selfie with those two, which was great. And then on day two, my oldest, Jack, wanted to go with his friends. They were all just deciding to go on their own. So he went with them and brought my bank card and lost it, as you guys have recounted here. But he also, he promptly comes home after that and says, hey, Dad, do you know that World War weird guy? And he comes home having bought one of your prints. He purchased one of your prints.
What? I didn't recognize that. I feel so bad.
Don't feel bad at all. It's fine. I'm fine with it.
Oh,
he bought. Oh, I can't remember. I have a photo of it.
He have got the friends of the podcast 2-for-1 deal. If only
he does not did not mention it at all. He didn't say anything. He just tell he him likes he's your got work. He's very much
he's got a credit.
A fan of your work.
Tell him he has a credit for the Winnipeg Comic Con. Oh,
no, I didn't put a text it to him. Or PemiCon. What's it called?
Or PemiCon, which is coming out. It's where I'm going to be this week. So, for the dear listener, thank you for listening to our vague story of Dan.
Here's what he bought. He bought this one. Your Eid is vital.
Oh, yes. Okay.
He likes amazing. Those. He really likes those kind of... I told him to check out Nico Rudolph because it has the same thing, but with
I have
bears.
A bunch in that set. I may send one home with you all today. Right. Yes. Beautiful. Okay. So, for the dear listener that has listened to our vague recounting of Icon, the point... of this I want to make, which we have made on previous episodes, but it was further underlined in this show, I think is encapsulated in how they ran their Lost and Found. Professional, well-organized, no fly-by-night stuff. Even though they were volunteers, they were clearly versed in like, what's of value? Someone else came while I was there talking about what turned out to be your bank card and said, you know, I lost this like plushy thing. And they said, can you describe it? He described it. They're like, we have three things like that. Be more specific. Like they were taking their time to make sure that the Lost and Found ran really well.
Yeah.
This is one of those moments, I think, that typifies the Benson and his whole team running Icon. They don't leave too much to chance. They think it through all the way to the end, and they try to make sure there are pleasant, excellent volunteers at every place where human beings have to interact with them. And I just think, the world of that show as a result of it.
I noticed when I was going through their website that the volunteers, the this year's volunteers don't get, they get a discounted entry, but not free entry, and only returning volunteers get free entry. So they promote loyalty, they promote people coming back, and that's where they gain experience and get better at their job is by doing that. So I think that's a great policy.
Hey, this isn't a dance hall sport.
Linden, it's not hearsay. I saw you with my own eyes. You were at the show in two different capacities, neither of them as the writer and letterer that you are in comics, but in two other things. Do you want to speak to those two moments?
Well, similar to the placeholder nature of me in this podcast episode, on behalf of worldwide famous artist Justin Curry, I was manning the Chasing Artwork booth through the day on Friday, the first day of the show, and then I took a shift working as a volunteer working at or manning the Prairie Comics Festival booth, which is a indie comics festival occurring September 23rd and 24th. Sorry, Sam, if that's incorrect.
We're going to reach out to Sam, and if it turns out you got that wrong, we're going to insert her voice over top of yours.
Perfect. At the West End Cultural Center this year, and I believe we're moving to a new location next year. But so I just spent a couple hours on the Sunday talking about indie comics and inviting people to take some free stuff. So from the cog in the machine, as it were, of the Chasing Artwork booth, Slag and Prince, to the laissez-faire nature of talking indie comics and not trying to sell people stuff on the Sunday, I got a little bit of everything.
So isn't this, though, kind of... what the convention world is supposed to be about when you're trying to build your community up inside of comics. It's a little bit of give, it's a little bit of take, right? The Repulsive Essential is, if you got to keep the lights on, you got to sell some product, you have to have something for people. If they want it, they're going to take it. But you also then donated your time to the community as a direct result. You got paid to be at the Chasing booth. You didn't get paid to be at the Prairie Comics booth.
But you did get to go to the convention all weekend for free.
I went on the Friday and the Sunday. I did a couple laps. As a non-diehard anime fan, I enjoy like the occasional manga and Studio Ghibli, etc. But a couple laps around the floor was enough for me to see as much as I needed to.
You weren't in the screening room 24/7.
I wasn't in the screening room. I wasn't standing in front of the booty print display.
You weren't in the maid cafe.
I wasn't standing in front of the booty print.
What's the maid cafe? Can I ask that? What is that all about?
I am mystified by it. Okay. I would dare not.
Someone should come on the podcast. I understand it. Maybe before next year's.
Yeah, we'll try and get that on because it's seems very popular. People are really into it. There's a whole culture there that I clearly don't understand.
I don't know what it is. I've never even heard of it.
Yeah, well.
Oh, it's a big deal. It is.
Yeah, it's a big deal. So, okay.
But we're not going to explain what it is.
No, leave comments. Nope. And leave comments for us if you know what it is so that Lyndon can look it up. I will also mention that at this show was also an interesting sort of layout difference. This was the Icon's biggest show they've ever done, the biggest footprint they've ever done at the convention center. And they had the most pre-ticket sales. Now, this is not me telling a tale out of school. One of the other things that I thought the show did really well is before the first day opened, they came on the announcements and they told us all of last year's attendance, told us what pre-sales were from last year, and then compared them to this year so that vendors and people would have a chance to figure out whether Saturday they need to bring more product or adjust their plans.
So they did that because numbers were high?
Because numbers were high. Okay. Right? They basically said but they didn't promise anything. The other great thing about this in the interest of transparency is they didn't say, and I'll give you the numbers. They said there was this is rough now, but about 3,000 pre-sales last year and about 8,000 total attendees. And they had 5,500 pre-sales. And so they don't know what the total number of attendance would be, but it seemed to suggest it'd be higher than last year. And so please adjust accordingly. If you need volunteers for your booths, if you need more staff, just recognize you might be busier than you think. And we think that's amazing, but we don't want you to get caught off guard. Right. Hmm. And I just thought that was such a, a team player move for a con to do to its entire.
Yeah. And kind of a nice email to get a couple of days before the con starts.
No, it wasn't an email. They announced it to everyone at the show as sort of breaking news because they had just got the numbers in and shared.
It was 15 minutes before the doors opened.
Yeah.
They went on the intercom and they gave those.
Yeah.
Numbers.
And just said, hey guys, wow, good job, everyone. Because they also sort of thanked everyone who had been promoting the show. To say this is a direct result of you telling everyone you're going to be here is people want to be here too. I thought that was really great. And then also the person that runs the Punk Rock Flea Market was in attendance. And if you're a fan of the show, the Punk Rock Flea Market also had they thought they might have 300 people, M said, before the event. And it was, thousands of people came through. And so they had come to sort of check out what they described as a really wonderful niche community that has grown and managed to grow into the larger, expand into mainstream culture without losing what it's all about. And so they're trying to look at ways to expand their own event into mainstream without losing what it's all about, and sort of just came to see how the anime crew was doing it, because not because they're the same kind of stuff, but because it has a very core aesthetic, a key value system. You have to know what you're doing to really appreciate it. And I just thought that bit of community that was going on, everyone who wants to run a show recognizing, what's that expression, game recognizes game, right? I'm not the guy who should be saying that out loud, but that's what was going on. It was really cool.
As someone who has never tabled at Icon, have only recently started doing shows in the last couple of years, even despite that, I know Icon has a reputation of being a very well-run show. They're very, they run a tight ship, which cannot be said of all of the shows that have graced the convention center floors in the past.
That's right. And I got a very playful, but like, how dare you, sir? Because I went on social media and say, like, this is the best, one of the best run shows I've ever been to. And someone who runs another show I go to is like, what have we done wrong? How did we hurt you, Gregory? We'll try to do better. You know, like, it was funny, but it was another showrunner that considers their show to be exceptionally well run and just would assume that that's who we were talking about, but it was Icon. So it is that high tide raising all boats, right? People who are recognizing. But I don't know how you get that many volunteers and retain them and keep them and keep them happy. That's magic to me, right? We couldn't get Lyndon to show up unless we gave him money.
But Prairie Comics Fest could.
Is that you again, Tetsuo? What? That pea brain.
I am going in an hour and a half to load into the World Science Fiction Society's event, which is happening here in Winnipeg Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I've never done this convention. It's called PemiCon, but they rename the con for every city they're in.
Oh, cool.
Right? PemiCon is the 15th North American science fiction convention and the first one in Canada. So writers, artists, scientists, makers, fans from all over North America and the world descend upon Winnipeg. And in their internal show notes to vendors, they said between 600 and 1,000 international travelers visit the show every year as part of their, like, that's their vacation. Is they go to this show, and so it's in a different city every year, so they see a different city every year, and they have people who, since its inception, have traveled to every single one for 15 years. Huh. Right? It's kind of like being a Grateful Deadhead, right?
I was going to say, it's like if KeyCon traveled.
Like if KeyCon traveled, yeah.
And are there guests or any other...
So they have guests. They have a whole bunch of featured guests, and I thought it was kind of interesting because they're programming... is different than a Comic-Con. So a literary convention or a science fiction convention usually has more ways to learn the craft. So you sit and you listen to speakers and there's roundtable discussions between different authors and writers and, you know, in this case, scientists and people in the actual field of science, not just science fiction, right? Talking and sharing stuff. So they have a whole bunch of different keynotes and recognized guests and all this kind of stuff, but I've never been to it. So when I noticed that a show was happening locally, it was right in my wheelhouse. Like, I love hard science fiction. You know, Larry Niven, I grew up just chewing on Larry Niven books. So,
me too. Is he coming there? No, he's dead. He's definitely dead by now.
Well, maybe
he's coming in spirit.
Maybe his frozen, maybe a frozen body part will travel.
Which would track with his rating, so that works. Right? I'm sure they did. No, they would grow a part of him. He had organ growth in his stories. Right. But that's a kind of convention where you would have a panel on organ growth and these concepts about science fiction.
Yeah, and people would bring up about, like, the latest peer-reviewed article. Right. As, you know?
Right. That we're almost there. Like, here's where we're going in science fiction and stuff. So that's cool. Actually, what is this? It's next week? I've never heard of this.
It's Thursday, Friday, Saturday,
so
Sunday.
Tomorrow?
Yeah, it starts
Holy
tomorrow.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
God, I'm working.
I would want the panel to be a scientist, a science fiction writer, and like a science fiction author or artist. And that's what you're discussing the scientific concept of and how you approach those things.
Yeah.
So guests of honor include Philip John Curry. I'm just looking it up right now so that I don't butcher anybody's names. Philip John Curry.
But of course, listener, by the time you hear this, this will be too late.
It'll be over, yeah. Or maybe not. Canadian paleontologist and museum curator, as well as a lifelong fan of science fiction. A Canadian biologist, award-winning author and editor. That is Julie E. Zersnada, he said. Frightfully. George Freeman, Canadian comic book penciler, inker, colorist, co-creator of, it doesn't list it here, but that should also include co-creator of Captain Canuck, shouldn't it?
We should, yes, come on.
Shouldn't it? Tanya Huff will be there. Keeper's Chronicles writer, Blood Book series. I don't know if you ever read any of those. They're pretty great.
No.
Wagenshik Rice, author and journalist, right? First Nation short story collection, Midnight Sweat Lodge. It's going to be there. Nisi Shawl, writer, editor. So like diverse, wide-ranging group of points of view, which I think makes for a really great set of discussions.
And where is it happening?
It is happening at the RBC Convention Center.
Cool.
Just like every big convention.
Well, maybe I'll pop over. I'm working this weekend at CTV, but maybe I'll pop over my lunch break.
So many science fiction conventions like this, like When Words Collide or the KeyCon, they often are hosted, and I don't know if this is true of this one yet, but they usually have much of their programming in a hotel and then an adjacent convention center. That seems to be how they've set this one up too, so that the hotel conference rooms will host the speakers and the sometimes blue pencil sessions, which is when you can bring your book to a science fiction author who will go through it and mark it up and give you some notes, things like that, in a little more intimate setting in the hotel. And then the dealer's room, I know, and the vendor's area is in the convention center. So it may be amazing. It also may be kind of a snoozer.
It's exciting, though, that it's the first one in Canada. I think that's a big deal. And I might try and write a story about it this weekend regardless.
Yeah. So now, there you go.
Are you ready to do another 4-day show? No,
yeah,
I
kidding,
asked,
eh?
I asked this keeping in mind, again, that I'm sitting in Justin Curry's seat right now, and he's currently
on his way, to San Diego
Comic-Con.
Yeah.
So for an even longer show.
So I start Wednesday or today. He's setting up preview night right now we speak in San Diego.
Yeah.
And I last year had thought maybe I'll do San Diego this year too. Too much stuff going on in my life, both creatively and personally, to also then be like, sorry, family, I'm getting on this plane for a week again. So kept it close to home. So I thought this was the perfect counterpoint to the FOMO I might feel. So when I was looking at the schedule, I was like, instead of San Diego, I'm going to do this local show. And it's special because it's never been here. And it's the science fiction community. And I had had some frictions with some members of the local science fiction community based on what I thought fairness and bullying looked like in the past. And since those people are not involved in this one, I thought this would be a good way for me to sort of reintegrate with my people. So I'll keep you posted.
Awesome. Well, I love science fiction. That is actually, it's my core, like, fandom of science fiction.
Yeah, me too, I think, yeah.
With horror as a close second.
Yeah. Well, it's funny you say that, because lately when people come up to see my work for the first time and they say, you know, I'm looking to start somewhere, that's often a question you'll get. You know, where should I start? What I ask them is, if this was a spectrum and at one end was science fiction and at the other end was horror, where would you put yourself? And I hold my hands up, you know, I get them to self-select where they'd like to be on that spectrum of between science fiction and horror. And then I can suggest a work
that
fits somewhere on that spectrum. Because that's me too. I oscillate between wanting to do like really hard sci-fi and somewhere between science fiction and horror. This fantasy is kind of in the middle there, right? And then sliding over to horror. So I have storyboards to work on if it's slow or, as we like to say, sleepy. Sometimes the show is sleepy. I also have a novel draft to work on if it's sleepy. But I really think what I might do is I have a helper that's going to be at the show. If the dealer's room is too sleepy, I'll leave them in charge of the booth and I'll go start attending. I'll go learn how to be a better writer from other people.
For sure.
That's enough, Tetsuo. Are you trying to kill him?
You got it! I'm going to wipe this guy all over the street!
Get a hold of yourself!
Going back to Icon for a moment, not to jump around. They did a show last year, you said. Was it at the same time last year? It was middle of July?
Yes.
So that would have been coming out of the event.
Yeah.
Correct.
How did this show then compare to how things looked last year, if it was, as they said, a very busy year?
In terms of just people's attitudes or in terms of attendance?
The people, the layout, the show size, the footprint itself. How did the show evolve from the other side of the table?
So I think this speaks to an episode we recorded recently, but I'm not sure where it will show up in our list, about when to get big.
That aired earlier this week.
It's out. Okay, so if you've listened to our previous episode about the problems of growing up, essentially, I think this show at least outwardly, has never fallen victim to any of the problems of expansion. They've always, at least on the outside, I don't know what their internal committees are like, so I can't speak to that, right? But I can speak to what it feels like on the outside, that they're usually asking people, how did the show go? How did it feel too crowded? Did it feel too cramped? Like, there was a follow-up after the big success of last year that basically seemed to be the corollary was they got a bigger space in the convention center this year to accommodate what would have been an enormous crowd in a very small space, which from a vendor perspective is way better to have lots of people in a smaller space. But from a community aspect, because a lot of people use Icon as a friend meeting. It's like an annual event where they get together with all the people who...
You meet up with all your anime nerd friends.
Yeah, meet them all there, and you need space for that, right? And so one thing that this show made room for was there was space for these big circles of friends who meet there every year to just sit down on the show floor and share what they've been doing and share what they've been... You know, like, there was all that kind of room. And it wasn't that there was more dealers, but it was very obvious on the outside, as someone who goes to a lot of shows, that the priority for what was being done here was to accommodate the community that arrived and not the vendors who arrived. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was really cool. The other thing that Icon does that other shows don't do is they have like 24-hour programming.
Yeah, it was funny because I was, you know, my kids wanted to go and they're like, okay, when can we leave and that kind of stuff. I'm like, well, let's just see what the hours are. And basically just has the opening at the beginning of the weekend and the closing at the end, because it does run 24 hours a day throughout the whole place.
The vendors area closes. They call it the marketplace. So the marketplace will close at reasonable hours. It's, you know, 8 hours a day it's open, and when it closes, but showings of hard to find anime, showings of series, gaming rooms, an arcade room,
dance parties,
a rave they host. Like, it is an experience. And both of my kids came and spent every hour they could at the show. And their big regret was they weren't old enough to be able to stay into the wee hours of the night yet. But that's clearly on their, like, life plans. It's like, one day I'm going to get a pass from Dad, help out at his booth, and then I'm going to enjoy that show around the clock. That is definitely there.
No.
So.
Now, are either of you, are you part of any of the anime fandoms? Do you have any anime?
Ghost in the Shell is my deepest fandom, if we want to talk like in minutia, but that one is not really... It's no One Piece, you know, like everyone knows One Piece and loves One Piece.
It's a movie as opposed to a series, right?
Well, there are series, by the way.
Oh, is there Ghost in the Shell?
Yeah, Ghost in the Shell, Standalone Complex, you know, this Ghost in the Shell. There's a bunch of Ghost in the Shell content out there, and I love almost all of it, except for the Netflix one. It's not that good. And Gundam, at being just an adjacent, I have since come to love many of the Gundam shows. I think Gundam Thunderbolt is for sure also my favorite. It's the one I've watched the most often. I'll go back to it and be like, oh, Gundam Unicorn is also really good. My kids love that one. So there are certain fandoms, but more than a Comic-Con, I find that the cosplay at the show is so much more diverse. Like, people are not playing the hits in their cosplay as often at an anime show as they're playing their favorites.
And deep cuts so that if somebody else recognizes it, you have a moment like, oh, I know who that is. Yeah. And you're like, you know, that's nice.
Huge.
My anime fandom, I mean, I'm not a huge fan, but I went through a phase in the late 90s when I worked at Blockbuster and we had an anime section and I just rented all of it. And I watched like Ranma 1/2 and...
I watched that too.
All of Macross, of course, which became Robotech, which I did actually watch as a child on television, and so that kind of stuff. The modern stuff, it's through my kids, My Hero Academia, and that kind of thing. They love that. Luke in particular, I know it's not technically anime, but he loves Avatar and that series, and that kind of. It's a little adjacent to anime, so he likes that kind of stuff. So I just kind of like what my kids like now.
And I grew up with the VHS, you know, the smuggled dub VHSs. So I saw an early cut of Akira.
Yes.
It would have been late, you know, in the West it was early, but it would have been a late cut by the time it got to us. And it was the first one I watched. It was dubbed by just some dudes.
not the big
name. It wasn't even a voice, right? It was like someone just overdubbed the English. It was clear that they spoke, maybe not that clear to me, but that they could speak both languages, and they were just doing their best dub. And that's how I saw it, like on a VHS copy of Akira back in the day.
That's awesome.
So, and that's really, and of course, it goes without saying, the entire Studio Ghibli library is on steady repeat in our house. It's our family time, like when everyone's had a stressed out week, when everyone has just had too much of the pace of the world, one or all of us will call Ghibli night. Like it's almost like a family meeting where someone will just say, let's just watch a Ghibli movie tonight. And that means all four of us, our presence is required. And we're just going to sit and we're going to like bask in the wholesomeness, and we'll just pick anyone. And the only rule is it's not the one we watched last time, but whoever wants to watch whichever one is fine, because all of them are incredibly well crafted and you'll see something new every single time you watch it. So, but I mean, it's almost like its own genre.
It is. The first one of those I saw was Nausicaa and the Valley of the Winds. But I didn't know what it was when I was a kid. My dad rented it and brought it home, and I had no idea what it was. I just watched this amazing film. And then I didn't know until decades later what it was called and who made it, because it was just this magical movie.
Yeah, they're so good. When Marnie was there, is new in our rotation. It's like we'd like to watch that one fairly often. It's got so much good stuff. But animation as a genre, as a medium of expression, is many and varied. So someone that says, oh, okay, I'm going to get into anime, and they download Crunchyroll, and they think that everything they watch is going to be great or powerful or cool science fiction. No. Think of a bookstore. Do you read from every section of the bookstore? If the answer is no, right? Your Crunchyroll account is like that. There's a type of anime for every single kind of thing you can imagine. Literally, that you can imagine.
Yeah, my son likes one about a soccer team.
Right.
It's just about a soccer team. That's it. Just every. It's kind of like Ted Lasso, like an anime Ted Lasso, I guess. I don't know.
Right? So it's just... and the further you go back into the 80s, the more of them are hand-drawn. And so there is a different, completely different feel. But because those are ranked in those streaming services now, right alongside modern ones, you get this... I don't know, it's interesting the way that modern ones are trying so hard to streamline their production to look like it's hand-drawn when it isn't. And it's so obviously not. I feel like they should just embrace what they are. They're not hand-drawn. Do your own thing. Stop trying to pretend like you were made by hand, because it just feels like a lie as opposed to a invention.
I went and saw Spider-Verse, the new Spider-Verse movie yesterday.
Yeah.
And so I was good. It was very good.
Speaking of animation.
But I would have to say that I came out of it going, a lot of that looks fuzzy to me. Like, there's a lot of fuzziness happening in this movie. Oh, and I know it's on purpose. I know they're looking for that style, but it bugs me after a while.
I love that fuzziness in that movie.
It's a computer animated movie, but they're trying to make it look like it's hand-drawn. It's the exact thing you're talking about.
They're trying... Well, yes, but I felt like where they couldn't cover it, they leaned into style instead. Like, they had adopted a style and now they're going for it. I don't know. It'd be interesting. When I saw the total list of animators, I realized what a nightmare that must have been for an art director to concisely convey a cohesive style across thousands of hands. Right.
Yeah,
and I'm sure it helps that none of those hands are unionized, so they can tell them whatever they want.
That's right. Make it 24 hours a day.
Yeah. A little pitch to the writer's strike and the SAG strike that's going on now. One of the reasons why studios pitch towards, we'll fix it in post with CG. One of the main reasons is that those workers are not unionized. So rather than have, say, Stan Winston Studios do the cool creature effects and have it be a union shoot where everyone has to be protected and paid fairly and given a living wage, they can instead get 1,000 animators to do it and pay them less than minimum wage in a developing nation. Like, so vote with your dollars, people.
Now you're king of the mountain, aren't you? But it's all garbage. Canada! out.
Okay, let's settle this once and for all.
This is a question I got asked a couple of times while I was at Icon. Why would you do a anime convention if you don't make specifically anime?
I asked that question.
Yes. And, well, not just you, though. I've been asked it many times because I've been doing the show now for a number of years. And kind of like what you brought up with Avatar, The Last Airbender, not being anime, but being anime adjacent. Some of my work is anime. Moon Patrol is manga adjacent. Many of the themes and structures under my story are based on those things that inspired me. We just listed them, right? All those right. different shows and things, right? So that's all under there. But if you just tuck your business hat on, separate from how great the community is and how great the response to the work is, even though it wasn't anime, with my business hat firmly on, their efforts, in this case, I mean Icon's like steering committee, to keep the core value of their show but make it more mainstream, meant that thousands of people came to the show curious about it, knowing nothing about anime either. And some of those people included a video game company that had been in the city for a good number of years, came up to me and said, I didn't know you existed. Your work is great. We have a project that I think it might fit with. Can we do it? Can we have a follow-up meeting and talk about maybe some design? Film producers, same thing, came to check out the show, looking for artists, found some manga artists that they thought were good fit, didn't know that I existed, right? So this idea that you have to be laser focused on where you fit your, I hate the word, but brand is...
Why do you hate that word?
Because right now it's been weaponized to mean sameness. Just do everything the same, right? Your brand has to be the same.
Well, consistent. I was
right,
consistent.
Yeah, and consistent means boring.
Okay.
So, but things that are outside of your wheelhouse a little bit, it can be exciting.
I think that, again, my son, my oldest, who is not an anime fan, that speaks to that, because he went and he didn't see anything in that art that he liked, but he liked your art, mm-hmm. right? And so that offers people who are kind of fringe or maybe got dragged there by their friend or something like that to enjoy and find something for themselves. Right. So,
well, and this is why I was so curious in asking the two of you where your anime fandoms lie, the status of your anime fandom. And it's because I'd say... First off, I had never seen a Studio Ghibli movie until 2020, and it's because my fiance introduced
so
me to Spirited Away.
To experience it all now.
We went to the movie theater. They were showing it, so I saw it on the big screen. And then in the middle of the event, all of those films went onto Netflix, and we started watching our way through. I still haven't seen them all, but a good chunk of them now. Oh. But I'd say in the last year or so, I became manga curious, and it's. It's because while I was traveling last year and I would go to these international comic shops, I noticed, and if you've ever been to a comic shop across the pond, you'll notice that manga is by far the largest section of any of those bookshops. Larger than the bande dessinée, larger than American comics. You really start to grasp how large the reader population is for those books outside of North America, where we're so dominated still by traditional Western comics. And so I've been really curious over the last year to look at what, you know, trying to take apart the machine of manga and see what elements in that work are things that I could bring over or introduce in my own work or what really resonate with me. And so it's only in that time that I've really started to read manga comics.
Which Hat Atelier? You should check out long form storytelling, character driven, really deep fantasy genre elements in the background of really well characterized human drama in the foreground and a really just absolute gorgeous art style. So there's that, and you can't do that in Western comics because in a 22 page increment, you've just got through the dinner that they had, you know, like they're
slower paced.
It's so much more, well, it's faster paced in a way, but it's decompressed.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
There's less panels per page and more emotion per page, in a smaller format. And so you get more pages, you know, it's you're slicing it differently. And a lot of people much smarter than me and who have studied it much more closely, comparing the pace of a manga story to a Western story. But really, to me, it comes down to, and again, this is just my opinion, not, this does not represent the opinion of the entire podcast, how space for time is managed in manga lends itself to character-driven stories much better than how space for time is used in Western comics.
That's interesting. I would say also, to speak to your topic about how much it's growing, it's also growing in North American stores as well.
Oh, absolutely.
Like the section, yeah. The manga section has become huge in every bookstore. It used to be tiny. It used to be a little, like a couple if you're lucky.
Yeah.
Akira was like the token one that they would put there, but... yeah, now it's like incredible. My kids love it. They absolutely love it. They read it all the time. Whenever we go to the library, they're in the manga section picking up
stuff. And the graphic novel section is shrinking.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, you're right. It's weird.
Well, because the distributors are different now. Oh, yeah. So we're going through, now if we're going to like go a step behind how the sausage is made here, the main distributors that distributed graphic novels to bookstores, Diamond Books, is fractured now. And so all of those companies are rearranging which distributors they're working with, and you need to have a specific exclusive agreement with bookstores. And so that's all getting worked out right now. And we're privy to some of those discussions through my agent and through some other publishers that I've talked to. We're going to see that surge again soon. As that distribution gets sorted out, you're going to see a lot more cool independent workshop in bookstores.
Cool. You was talking about that last week, I remember.
Was I?
Yes.
Like a broken record.
Yeah.
I'm just on repeat. Right? You can splice.
You just want to be a part of it. That's all. You're just excited to be a part of it.
I'm just excited to be a part of it. That's exactly it. If you're a part of any community, remember that it's give and take. You have to take a little bit sometimes, but you should give more than you take. This is GMB Kimichek reminding you to join the fight and make comics.